Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now are Kirby Dick and Amy Ziering, the director and producer of the new film just out, The Invisible War, a groundbreaking investigation into the epidemic of rape within the U.S. Armed Forces, the institutions that perpetuate and cover up its existence, and its profound personal and social consequences. The film won the Audience Award at the 2012 Sundance Film Festival. And Kirby Dick is a Academy and an Emmy Award nominated documentary film director. His films include Outrage, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and Twist of Faith. Amy Ziering is an Emmy-nominated and award-winning producer and director whose films include Outrage, The Memory Thief, Derrida, and Taylor's Campaign. Prior to becoming a filmmaker, she taught literature and film at Yale University and Bennington College. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kirby Dick and Amy Ziering.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let me begin with you, Amy, because the film is, it's about women and about how we still don't have equality, at least in this society, not just in terms of pay, but we don't have equality in terms of access to justice, really.
Not equality to access to justice, but that applies to men and women in the military, actually. And our film focuses predominantly on women, but the epidemic is statistically the same for men. We just chose women as the gateway issue. But not to take apart from that, yes, there's incredible culture, a double standard. Every single woman I talked to in the military said, I had to be twice as good a soldier as any male soldier in order to get any credibility. It's true. There's not parity there. Women are fighting for parity, and they're there, and they're incredibly doing a great job in our military. But no, there's a huge double standard still at play.
And Kirby, the thing that's heartbreaking about it is that not only the women victimized by the actual rapes, and they're quite often repetitive, they're victimized by this culture that essentially victimizes them again and treats them as though they're either breaking an unwritten law or it's even worse, there's a systemic wall that they come up against. That's just got to be just the hardest thing in the world. And you see the women in the film, many of them are very broken. It's really quite disturbing.
Yes, all of them actually said that, while the rape was horrible, it was actually the way that the military responded that was even worse. I mean, these are all incredible soldiers. These are all people who, very idealistic, believed in the military, believed it was the right thing to join and serve their country, many after 9/11. And so they joined with this attitude that everybody in the military is my brother and sister. Then they get raped, and they're being advised by many people around them not to report. And yet they still have the courage to come forward and report. And then when that happens, then the military turns on them. I mean, oftentimes investigating them. And, in several cases that we spoke with, women we spoke with personally, they were single, they were raped by a married man, and the woman was charged with adultery, and the man walked.
Well, in the case of the main character, if you will, the young woman had joined the Coast Guard at an isolated base in Michigan, and her accuser, basically, he didn't run the place, but he had total control over her life, and there was nobody that she could turn to, and you just felt like this woman was in the most nightmarish prison.
No, it's really Kafka-esque, and it's like a parallel universe, a world unto its own. And it was startling doing this film and doing these investigations and finding that out. I mean, I had no idea. And what we hope the film shows is that these are people that have dedicated their lives to protecting our civil rights. We need to make sure their civil rights are protected. And because within the military, if crimes are committed, it goes to judicial courts within the military. That does not make a sound system. There needs to be some oversight and intervention, and that's what happens with these rape cases. There's too many disincentives for commanders to actually prosecute the perpetrators in the military, which does not happen in civilian life.
But I think the film also shows the deficiencies in the aftercare system. We're all quick to wave flags when the soldiers go off to war. But when they come back to war after they've made the sacrifices, quite often the same government that's anxious to put them in harm's way is the same government that shortchanges them. And you see that with this young woman from the Coast Guard going to the VA system. And she's severely hurt by a punch in the face from her rapist and misdiagnosed and in agony for God knows how long. I mean, it's just, again, it's not just double victimization, it's triple victimization.
Yeah, well, one of the things our film points to, but it's not really the main focus, is the ways in which we're not even equipped to deal with this trauma, you know, on any kind of level. So these women, when they get assaulted, as Kirby said, it's not only the assault itself and then the betrayal and lack of justice, but also the aftercare is fairly, as our film demonstrates, you know, poor to non-existent. And it isn't exactly the fault of the VA. There's wonderful VAs and they are trying, but the training isn't up to speed yet. And it's the capacity, they just simply don't have the capacity to deal with the level of this epidemic.
And Kirby Dick, what attracted you to this project? Because, you know, we've spoken a few times and you did an extraordinary film about the culture of kind of cover up, if you will, in a kind of closeted gay Washington power structure, you know, that was extremely revealing and very disturbing, and I believe still continues to this day. So are you tilting at windmills here?
Well, certainly the cover-up around this. I mean, this is, Amy and I saw this as one of the most significant cover-ups in this country of the last several generations. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of men and women who've been assaulted. I mean, it could be well over 500,000 over the last several generations. And this is a story that very few people knew about. There had been no feature film on the subject made, you know, before we made our film. And not only that, there really had never been a book that sort of put the whole package together of what the underlying systemic problem was and looked at it from a historical point of view and also looked at it from a very emotional and personal point of view. And so that's one of the reasons we undertook this, was because we wanted to get this story out. I mean, the way that injustice continues is if, you know, if the public doesn't know.
Well, one of the scenes that it's just heartbreaking is when the father of one of the young women who's raped, and she's raped as a recruit, and one of her fellow recruits rapes her. And how he recounts when his daughter tells him that she's no longer a virgin, and he insists, yes, you are, because you didn't give anything away. Boy, that was tough.
Yeah, that was really heartbreaking, and that was an interesting story, because when I initially reached out to Hannah and asked if she'd be in the film, she told me about her background, and I said, wow, your dad, you know, I'd love to talk to your dad, and she gave me his phone number, and I called him. And he said, you know, and we spoke, and I said, we're coming to film Hannah, can we do an interview? And he said, you can do an interview with my daughter, but I can't speak on camera, I'm active duty, I'm going to be deployed in Iraq at the end of the month. He said, but tell me the weekend you're going to be there, because I want to be home when you're there, and I want to make sure she's okay for the interview, I want to be there to support her. So we flew out, and we show up at the door, and he opens the door, and he's in full military garb, as you see in the film. And he looked at me, and he said, Amy, I changed my mind, I'm going to speak. He said, let him come after me. He said, I gave him 40 years. This is my daughter. So we filmed the interview.
And in her case, of course, it was the NCIS that covered up. The files disappeared, the rape kit and everything disappears. And then she does her own sleuthing, right, Kirby?
She does. And, after she's told that, after, you know, the court is told that this information doesn't exist, and then the perpetrator is able to get a pass, she continues and actually calls NCIS in Washington, the headquarters there, and finds that, yes, they still have all this information on file. So, but it's too late because, you know, the court-martial has concluded.
You said, Kirby said that could be up to 500,000 women have been raped in the military?
At least.
Well, 500,000, I'm sorry, 500,000. And well, I would say probably over 500,000 women and men have been raped over the last raped or sexually assaulted over the last several generations.
These numbers are hard to get because over 80% of the cases are not reported. So by we're just doing the math from DOD statistics that are reported and extrapolating from there. Part of the cover-up is this sort of impossibility of getting clear stats on this issue.
Right. But I mean, what's interesting is the Department of Defense in the last 2 years, its own estimates is that there have been 19,000 men and women assaulted per year within the military each year in the last 2 years. And prior to that, it's actually 2006, I think their estimate was over 30,000. So the numbers are extremely high. They're really not coming down significantly. This is a problem that is happening today. This is not something that's happened in the past only.
So at the risk of indulging in amateur psychiatrics, what is the psychological component here to the apparent sense of invincibility, the sense of entitlement on the part of men to take these women's bodies as though they are taking a hill or dominating a battlefield? taking no prisoners, you know, those all those metaphors you understand from the military.
Well, I think that's very rich. We don't really address it in our film, and we would just be speculating. But there is something about the way the indoctrination is about to become a warrior, you really have to objectify the other and see it as an other so that you can sort of conquer it, kill it, and not feel any empathy. And I think there is some element of that psychology at play in the ways in which that women are often, you know, viewed or ostracized, or they're sort of made the internal other often. Not always, and I don't want to be, you know, saying anything. There's wonderful units in the military where women are sort of incredibly well respected, but I have seen that and anecdotally, you know, noticed it and seen that. I think that does in part fuel the psychology of this. Well, you know, sort of if there's underlying a conscious and unconscious misogyny, of course, it's a perfect storm conditions for a woman to be victimized.
But most men in the military are really horrified by this. I think most of these assaults, I know most of these assaults are committed by serial perpetrators. Whether in the civilian world or in the military, most rapes are committed by serial rapists who go on to do it again and again. And the problem here in the military is that these men have not been investigated, prosecuted, and incarcerated. They've been allowed to operate. And most of these men are higher ranking men, have a higher rank than the people they assault. So they're in an ideal position to order someone into a very secluded environment and just assault them.
But you mentioned in the film shows people who have been, men who have been sexually molested. What explains that? What is the, are the same motivations and psychological underpinnings that we're talking about vis-a-vis women? What's the story with the men? What are the perpetrators getting out of that?
Well, I mean, obviously sexual assault is an issue of power. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what this is about. And these men can assault either men or women. And that's what they do. I mean, there's certainly, as Amy said, within the military, as many, if not more, men have been assaulted and are being assaulted as women.
And what's the recourse for men? It's got to be even more difficult, isn't it, because of the stigma in a macho culture against homosexuality?
Oh, yes. I mean, as devastated as the women are by being assaulted and then by coming forward and not being believed, the men are even much more devastated. Oftentimes, and very rarely do they even report. I mean, this is something oftentimes they keep with them for decades and decades. It's actually in some ways similar to the abuse within the Catholic Church, where it was difficult for us to find men, in fact, who'd been assaulted recently. It takes, as I said, decades to even process this and come forward. They've attempted multiple suicides. It destroys their life.
And what kind of statistics do we have? I mean, given the extraordinary 500,000 number of women, what would be a guess? Please give me the number.
I would say half of that. Well, again, I would say we can very comfortably say that I would say 500,000 men and women have been sexually assaulted in the military. I'm sure that nearly half, or perhaps even more, of those numbers are men.
And Amy Ziering, some of the women portrayed in your film, The Invisible War, again opening tomorrow in theaters in Los Angeles, New York, D.C., and San Francisco. A couple of the women, though, particularly the woman who's in the Navy, who is out with her girlfriend or wife, or I think she's referred to as her wife, who's very supportive. And it's really tragic that I guess it's her wife's two kids, these two young boys, that are essentially propping her up. And she's clearly got some form of PTSD, right?
Oh, Trina has severe PTSD, and she even has a service dog with her all the time, Susie. And it was really quite, you know, poignant to be in their household and see these young boys who adore her and wish they had knew her before. You know, she came into their lives, after she'd left the military. Yeah, and they had to have signs all over the house saying, please knock. You know, you can't startle. For her symptoms, it was a trigger. If she's startled, they can't walk up from behind her. And so from little boys, they were sort of raised to sort of look out for her, which broke her heart, truly. You know, I don't know if she talks about it in her film, but she talked a lot about it to me off camera, that it's sort of, isn't it sad that, you know, they have to be caregivers for her because this happened to her? And you know, she's very grateful to have them in her life, but she feels a little sad about that, too.
But Kirby, she's an example of something that's apparently quite endemic, and that is the homelessness, drug abuse. She went into a downward spiral when she got out of the military after being raped and having nobody come to her defense and stonewall and essentially, you know, accuse the victim.
Right. No, I mean, what happened with her was she was on an isolated island in Adak, Alaska, and she was repeatedly drugged and raped by actually a gang of men and one woman who were the military police on the island. So she had absolutely nowhere to go. I mean, and I asked her actually just relatively recently how many women did she think perhaps were raped by them. She said possibly dozens. And not one of these people were investigated. At one point, even though she never reported when she was there, they actually tried to kill her. They threw her into the Bering Sea. So she's coming out of that experience just completely devastated. And yes, I mean, there's just a high number of veterans or homeless have been assaulted in the military.
I think they said that the statistics are the highest number of women who have experienced military sexual assault the highest number of homeless veterans who are homeless have experienced sexual assault, female veterans who are homeless.
But the part about this is bizarre. I guess it's to do with the projection. If you're trained to be a warrior, but it's like, they're, you know, at war with their own people, with their own citizens, and destroying the lives of your comrades. It makes absolutely no sense.
No, it's horrible. And also what makes the assault so devastating is that these women know how good the guy is at certain sort of, you know, deadly arts. Like, you know, one was saying she was attacked by a sniper. She was terrified to report because he's really good with guns and she knew it firsthand. I mean, it's sort of this odd situation. So that we found very interesting. And a lot of them, as a result, one of the PTSD symptoms is to sort of arm up, you know, and as you see in our film, Corey always carries a knife, and it's just a horrible situation to be in.
Well, but the film doesn't, as devastating as the testimony from these women and the men as well is, there is some redemption in the sense that, particularly with the women in Congress, you know, both Republican and Democrat, and also, of course, the Democratic congressman seems to be carrying Poe, right, from Texas.
Republican
congressman. Poe from Texas seems to be standing up for these women. The scenes where the women are telling their stories to the congresswoman are very touching because she really feel that finally somebody's listening, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, that meant a great deal to them to go and to speak to, you know, quite a few congressmen. And actually, what was interesting in those five of our subjects, we filmed them speaking to about three or four members of Congress. And even as serious as these congresspeople were about trying to change things, they learned so much from talking to these women. I mean, because they had this experience, you know, and they had the details that even the members of Congress didn't have. But what we tried to do with this film was to really make it very bipartisan or nonpartisan, because whether you're Democrat or Republican, I mean, we can all agree that you know, we should all protect the people who are protecting us. And the other thing we tried to do with this film is we didn't want, it's not an anti-military film. I mean, all of our subjects said to us, we don't want to be a part of this film if it's anti-military, because you know, we believe in the military. Many of them still wish they had a career in the military. So because of that, and because we really wanted to reach policymakers and not have it be sort of a broadside on the military, which, you know, oftentimes films from the left do, but we wanted to kind of reach beyond that. We wanted to reach beyond that and reach policymakers. And I think we've been very successful in that regard.
Well, just in closing, Amy Zirian, do you think that the film is, there's been so much evidence. I mean, what does it take to shame the military brass? And the Congress has been on their case, too. It's pretty clear. Do you think this is something that's going to be dealt with finally?
I very much hope so, and I think that the film will be a game changer. I mean, we're seeing signs of that already. I mean, it's sort of bursting onto the public consciousness in a way that, you know, has never happened before. The film was watched by the Defense Secretary, Leon Panetta, and he went up and thanked one of our executive producers who he bumped into accidentally at the White House Correspondents' Dinner for making it, and said it, you know, extremely moved him and, you know, was influential in his decision to hold a press conference 2 days after viewing it. to change policy. So, you know, the military really wants to do the right thing. It, you know, I think that the film will help educate it in how to do that. And we're hopeful, quietly hopeful, that actually it will affect real change.
And Kirby, do you think that it's a game changer?
Oh, I think it's a game changer in terms of the public. There's no question about that. Now, you know, the military is a very longstanding and powerful institution. I'm, you know, cautiously optimistic at best. I mean, the Army itself is, you know, showed it at its national conference of 500 people who deal with sexual assaults in the military. There is response, but they've got a lot farther to go because they have to go after these serial perpetrators, you know, as if they were enemies within, and they haven't done that yet.
Well, I thank both of you for joining us here in the studio today. Kirby Dick, Academy Award and Emmy Award nominated documentary director, whose films include Outrage, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and Twist of Faith, and Amy Ziering, an Emmy nominated and award-winning producer and director, whose films include Outrage, The Memory Thief, Derrida, and Taylor's Campaign. Together, they have made the new film, The Invisible War, that opens tomorrow in Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco. Thank you both.
Thank you.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.